Hey, good afternoon. It's 50, yeah? Let me do one more.
¿Qué sal hacemos, amigo?
¿Carne asada, pastor?
Dale, pastor.
Sí, con todo. Gracias.
Dale, derecho, pastor. Amigo, al pastor, con todo, cebolla, cilantro,
¿sí?
Salsa, todo.
It is deceptively simple. Exchange your dollars, walk a couple of hundred yards, get your passport stamped, keep walking, wave off the taxistas and the hustlers, sit on a plastic chair and order an al pastor torta, a sandwich so heavy with meat and mayonnaise and jalapenos that it can only mean one thing. You are in Mexico, just past the San Isidro port of entry, one of the busiest border crossings in the world. Easy. It's also incredibly complicated. I happen to have been born in the land of the blue passport, not the green, and to have walked from north to south, not the other way around, so I cannot mistake my own convenience for the whole truth of this particular line in the sand. The border may be fluid for me, but it is increasingly impermeable for the afflicted, the poor, the asylum seekers from everywhere south of the line. The trip is launching 5 weeks in pre-COVID Tijuana. Here is what I hope to do with these shows. Over alcohol and other delights, I wanted to introduce you to a third group. Not quite gringo, not quite Mexican, but instead a border people, with one foot on either side of the wall. These are the Tijuanenses, natives of a still undefeated city, so sketchy, so vibrant, so ready to take its place as one of the great border towns on earth. I have a particular interest in this tribe, a particular belief in the destiny of good things from Tijuana. My mother-in-law was born here to a family that had been uprooted during the Mexican Revolution, came north to TJ, and then eventually headed further to Los Angeles. They worked in meatpacking plants, did laundry and housekeeping. Their daughter, Christina, started calling herself Chris, cut her hair, met a Japanese-American dude, raised the woman that I would eventually marry, and all the while, she was climbing every last rung of the American dream, with a master's degree, a home on the west side of LA, a little Fiat Spider sports car with a vanity plate. These are Tijuanenses with dreams too big to be walled in. I owe a lot in my life, in my kids' lives, to their generational hustle. The hustle is strong with our first guests in Tijuana, Eduardo Chavarin, a designer and entrepreneur who has styled the border life as well as anyone. His streetwear brand Naco gave voice to a revolution of reclaimed pride in Mexico. And in the years since, he has brought his humor and flair to everything from music festivals to mezcal. We drank green smoothies with cactus and celery, and we talked about the cross-border California life, one which we are all looking forward to getting back to after the pandemic. And here's a disclaimer that's actually fun to read. You'll notice that in this episode, we talk a bit about the current U.S. president. We were referring to Donald J. Trump. He is no longer president. This is Nathan Thornburg, and from Roads and Kingdoms, you're listening to The Trip, drinking with exceptional people around the world. All right, let's get started. Eduardo, what did you bring to drink?
I brought green juice. Well, I would say air quotes on green from my not so favorite place in Tijuana because it's a holiday and my favorite juice place wasn't open. Yeah. It's not that it's my favorite because it's amazing. It's just the one that it's convenient to me, you know, the one that it's on my side of the street, I guess, and I don't have to turn around and do all those
like, yeah, tricky Tijuana traffic moves.
Exactly. So it's supposed to be green juice with nopal and celery and all that stuff, but I'm halfway committed to it because I always add pineapple because I need to make it a little sweet. I'm not too much into the bitter juice.
You're not like a kale smoothie.
No,
kind of dude.
No. Okay. I mean, if it has a lot of orange juice and pineapple to balance it out, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm trying to do the. I guess I. That's what my wife and I say. We kind of behave during the weekday, you know, and try to do the greens and the juices and stuff because by Thursday night, Friday night, there's always something flowing, right?
It's a fucking national holiday today.
Yeah, but it's a Monday, and I work in the U.S. mostly, so
I know
the emails are trickling in.
I was texting my wife, and I was like, I had just assumed that the kids were not in school, and I was like, it's a fucking Dia de la Rev-, and then I was like, oh, okay, yeah, they're in New York. Like,
nobody
cares about Pancho Villa
and Emiliano Zapata.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right, well, you've done sort of a soft sell on this off green juice.
Very soft, yes.
But I'm gonna try it anyway.
Is this a first for the podcast, a green juice?
I think it might be.
Yeah, it's usually,
I mean, it's usually just like absinthe and rubbing alcohol.
Oh.
No, we dabble in the, you know, I did go to Iraq during Ramadan, so it's not like every episode has alcohol. Sometimes you're just drinking water or tea,
right?
But
so what's the verdict on the...
It's good. Yeah. I mean, I lack the palate maybe of different juices. Like, are there like juice connoisseurs? Would be like,
that probably,
we could balance it.
Yeah.
But I like this idea. I mean, listen, I am not the first American to come to Tijuana and just eat a bunch of fucking tacos and drink tequila till late in the night. But I'm definitely one of those Americans. So if we can start this morning out with like a nice green juice.
Mm-hmm. Salud. With green juice.
Salud. Yeah, that's good. And it's got the nopal.
Nopal, right?
It's got a bit of that local flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a nice reminder, some of the stuff we're going to talk about. Juice drinking, it's a very LA thing.
Mm-hmm. The very LA.
Alta and Baja California are not that different.
No.
So when something takes off there, it's going to come down here.
Eventually, it'll make its way down, yeah.
When something starts here, it can actually make its way north.
Oh yeah,
that's what you're hope, you know.
Yeah,
I imagine a large part of your life's work has been about greasing those skids.
Yes,
smoothing
of course.
That process.
Right. I was just in Oaxaca, and you can definitely see where all the mezcal things happening in Los Angeles. Of course, you know, are. Where the roots are, you know, of course, from Oaxaca is, of course, the biggest producer, and they have a big scene. But now in LA, you can find it in a lot of bars, right?
Yeah.
Mixology and things like that. It's starting to creep in.
It's an extreme fucking danger to Oaxaca, too, right? Because, mm-hmm. like, God forbid that if somebody had identified in China, like, somebody identified, like, maguey as, like, a virility mm-hmm. plant, there would be no more magueys left on Earth within, like, 6 months, you know?
Yeah.
American appetites can really fucking place up.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely not the expert, but I believe China buys a lot of tequila.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, I think so.
Well, I mean, I guess when they've just kind of like raised all of Jalisco and just planted in blue agave and, mm-hmm. you know, they've got the muscle to create yeah. as much.
Of course. Yeah, I know they'll absorb it. Right? Yeah.
The thing that everybody loves about, or at least me, about mezcal is how it's so connected to the smallness of the producers and these palenques up being up in the hills and all the different varietals of maguey. But the Oaxacans, they seem to know how to defend themselves, you know, and like in their land,
stand
and their
ground. Yes.
Yeah. So I can't be too paternalistically mm-hmm. worried about them for them. They know what the fuck they're doing. So, yeah. So today is the day of the Mexican Revolution, which is underappreciated. I think most people are in the North, or, you know, in terms of Mexican holidays, it's all like Drinco de Mayo, you know, mm-hmm. like and nothing else. Yeah. This is a big day. It was like 1910 started. I am like very hazy on the facts, but like a couple million people died in the revolution, which lent for a decade or something. And that's, I think that was the big start of like mass migration north also, like a million. I was reading somewhere that a million Mexicans during those 10 years went into the United States, obviously even beyond the parts that were Mexico to begin with.
And I also think that that's, I think I'm remembering correctly, that's almost how marijuana and cannabis came into the United States, by those people that were leaving Mexico. They brought it into the U.S. So I think there's...
They were like, not without my stash.
Exactly. There's I believe it was one of those, I read it in one of those Times Magazine magazines that it's only dedicated to one topic, right? That, yeah. that they do these specials. And they were talking about it. So there's credit to give to Pancho Villa for getting stoned in the U.S., I guess.
Dude, I'm quite sure that MedMen has a Pancho Villa line of, you know.
There's a little altar to him in the back, right? In the stockroom.
Right. An edible burro gummies or something. Exactly. You know. That, you know, that I guess is the beginning of, or at least a big moment in this long relationship of culture. And I was reading different things, you know, that you've posted or have been written about you and your work. One of the things I've gone through your WordPress blog posts. Yeah. No, it's all like very, it's very of a piece. Like you have a very consistent kind of aim and goal. I thought one of the ways that you put it when you were promoting Cinco de Mayo thing, that Mexico is the shit, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of design collective, who's our mutual friend, mm-hmm. Ahmed Batista's project. They were doing an LA thing, and mm-hmm. you had referred to it as basically like fighting the cultural war, right? It's like, come help us celebrate and fight the cultural war from south to north. Mm-hmm. So tell me about that war. Like, you know, what are the opposing sides? Like, what are the stakes? Like, what is this cultural battle that you've been fighting for 20 years now?
Right. Well, I would say for the 45 years I've been alive, you know, being born in Tijuana, it's kind of, I would say it might be strange to some people, but it's normal to me, of course, because it's the only thing I know. But of course, in the 80s, when I grew up, this is, of course, before internet and any of that, it was I would call it a privileged place, right? Because you would be raised to be bicultural, and you would have these both sides to think. My mother was luckily born in San Diego. She's Mexican, but then we had everything sorted out for us to cross the border. And I remember as a kid, we would cross the border to do laundry, to buy milk. The border crossing would take you 5 minutes. You know, hey, who wants a hamburger? We got to go do laundry to, you know, who wants to go to McDonald's? Because we have to go do laundry or buy milk or something, you know? So she would pack us up in the car and we would cross the border and things. And then, for example, I remember specifically things when the first alternative bands from Mexico started coming up, the first real ones, like, or Latin America, right? Soda Stereo or Caifanes or Café Tacuba or things like that. It was strange to us in here, like, why are they making rock with Latino? Like, this doesn't go together, right? Like, I'm being informed here in the States about, you know, like, I'm getting the real thing, and here there's, you know, or Europe or everything that was coming, anything from, you know, I don't know, Jane's Addiction or the Red Hot Chili Peppers, that or the Smiths or the Stones and things like that. And when these guys are wearing guayaberas and long beards and they're, you know, expressing this beautiful Mexicanity, it was awkward to us to see the real, you know. So I've always had one foot in each side, and it's been very, very interesting to witness that.
I mean, you know, as we were talking about before we started, my mother-in-law is from Tijuana, so my wife's half Mexican, and probably one of the most Mexican things about her is her love of Morrissey.
Right, yes. You know? Yes.
Which is like... So how does that play when you have like your own emo rock groups coming up? Were you proud, or
there's this theories about why Mexico. I think because we're very emo maybe in Mexico, but there's of course Morrissey, the Smiths, the Cure is in that bucket for sure. Interpol, right? Mm-hmm. There's this honorary Mexican bands that we glorify out here. You know, so yeah, I mean, I don't know why, but yeah, I guess we're a little dark. We're a little emo out here. So anyway, growing back, it was a very, very interesting place to me. It was a privileged place because we always had this comparison, right? I mean, I think you could cross the border, but there was always a delay pattern, like we were talking about, for things to come to Mexico. I mean, I think back in the day, the San Diego, you could see The Empire Strikes Back on theater, and then they were debuting Star Wars, the first one, here in Tijuana, right? So there was always a little bit of a delay.
You crossed the border and walked back 5 years.
Exactly, absolutely. Yeah. It was a little time traveling, but very, very interesting. I'm very, very privileged to be, you know, not now that I see it, you know, from a distance or. When we were in school, like in junior high school, and we would travel like inside to, I don't know, Aguascalientes or to play soccer or a thing, you would see the gap, right? You would see the distance from things. I mean, everything we were striving here, I was going to private schooling here. I mean, everybody wore Nikes. Nobody wore a Mexican brand, you know? So we would go in the country and you would like, wow, what is this? Where is this coming from? And then you start realizing, oh, I live in a very special place, you know, with different ambitions and different things.
And that brings me, I'm gonna get the mission statement, which I wanted to repeat in full, so that I'm sure that I've nailed it. The manifesto of NACO.
Okay. Wow. I haven't read that in a while, but yeah, let's give it a shot.
NACO's manifesto, as it was posted on its website back from the early days, right? It was started 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Very spiritual in its acceptance of the self. And so, if one's self wants to dress in unbuttoned, brightly colored, shiny shirts, skin-tight, faded black jeans, gold chains, white socks, and black shoes, topped off by a magnificent mullet, so be it.
Yes.
That is the NACO manifesto.
I still stand by it.
Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
So, let's start by having you define NACO as it's used in kind of like, what does it mean in Mexican kind of slang?
Right. Well, it's the trying to put it through the, I guess, the American lens, I would say would be the equivalent of white trash, right? But in Mexico, so I guess it would be brown trash. I don't know. But the naco, or being brown trash or white trash, I don't think it sees or respects any social or economic status, right? I mean, you can have very wealthy people that are very white trashy in their way, they dress or the way they behave, right? And the same thing, there's knuckles. You know, it's just kind of a way of being, and the idea and I think the word has evolved and it's changed and it has different perceptions. Now, I think we helped maybe, you know, shape that a little bit with what we did, because it was very popular. But the genesis of it, when my business partner Robbie and I at that point were trying to do, we were just playing around with the idea of, let's make a t-shirt that nobody would wear, right? And we say, okay, why don't we put Naco in it, right? And then that's kind of the genesis of it. But then if you also look at the beginning of the brand and going back to this being bicultural, one of our first design was the one that said Star Wars, right? Estargurs, as opposed to Star Wars.
A deeply phonetic rendering of like a Mexican accent, Star Wars.
Right, yeah. but that happened, that was a literal interpretation of what we were living, in a sense that when I move from Tijuana to LA to go to art school, I would catch myself saying, oh, why do I say Star Wars and not Star Wars, right? And then we started celebrating that, right? And I guess, I mean, when you're 20 years old, you can only pick from what you're living in, you know, you don't have a huge portfolio of options, right?
Yeah.
So we were, again, lucky enough to be born in this place that gave us all these little gems, and we were, I guess, tuned in enough to pick them up.
Right. And kind of using the Naco brand and, you know, company that you built to situate yourself somewhat there. So when you're going to Aguascalientes and seeing these kids who don't have the border money and so on, you know, they're kind of like a different form from you. You feel different when you're in LA because of the way that you pronounce Star Wars and stuff. Mm-hmm. So who's the Naco there? Can it be anybody? Is it the poor kids in Aguascalientes? Or it's you in LA?
You see, for example, to me, of course, being in Tijuana, I would think that, and this, of course, me being completely ignorant and naive at that point, to me, for example, we would almost make fun of the kid in school that would wear a Mexican brand, like Tennis Panam, right? Like Panam sneakers that have now made a revival and are the coolest thing to wear in Mexico, right? But for example, that would be Naco to us,
right?
You know, but I'll tell you what, maybe to that kid in Aguascalientes, they would say, look at these kids wearing all American stuff. Aren't they Mexican? So we might look Naco to them, you know? So it's a matter of perception. Right?
That's interesting. And I guess in the, you know, in the eyes of a fresa, or the, you know, the strawberry, as they call them, which is kind of the...
Well, in the eyes of the fresa, you know, riding public transportation would be not cool, right?
Right. That's true. It's a real aspirational lifestyle thing.
Absolutely.
Being fresa.
Right.
So the strawberries aside, you had it. This was a way for you to kind of like think about identity for yourself.
Of course.
And like, and across the border. That original question is a kind of a crazy question. Why try to make a t-shirt that nobody would wear? Like, were you just being like punk or nihilist about
exactly.
it?
Yeah, exactly. What would be, you know, just trying to go against the current, you know, against the system or something like that. And I mean, but that's what art school, what you do, you know, you challenge yourself and you post these questions and see if there's, you know, but we actually brought this one to life and it caught fire.
Yeah, in a pretty astonishing way, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to get a sense of like the boundaries of the empire, you know, at its greatest height. But I mean, you dressed Juanes for the Grammys,
right?
Didn't you have like you were opening restaurants or something?
Well, at one point, we opened one in Mexico and then one briefly in Colombia.
All right, that's fucking crazy to go from like making a t-shirt to just like, okay, now we got a restaurant in Colombia, right?
Yeah, we had our own stores. We would be maybe in around, I don't know, 200 shops or all around Mexico. You know, Diego Luna was our partner and big supporter, you know. Really, really good friend. Very grateful to him for, you know, supporting
he's,
us.
He's a good dude. I think he had traveled around with my partner Matt and Jose Andres in Spain or something, and there you know, he just sounded like a very fucking intellectually keyed in dude.
Oh yeah, man, and he's very very committed, you know, to helping the community and to giving back, you know, and of course he's destroying it with a. Star Wars projects and Narcos and
Star Wars
projects and
right. Well,
I hope they don't link him back to it because he might get in trouble. I mean, oh, by the way, you owe some royalties to the company. We're gonna deduct them from your check.
That's right. You were out there siphoning off of the brand. That's that alone. I mean, obviously Diego's like his own thing and was gonna be a star no matter what.
Yes,
but
the
idea of coming from, you know, this kind of like having this severe distance between, you know, the Mexican view of Star Wars and the pronunciation of it, and now that, like, you know, it's the biggest star in Star Wars now is a Mexican dude. It's kind of awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then you had Naco Nights, right? You had like concerts and got involved in music. And...
Right. We did. I think we did the first sneaker collaboration with a U.S. brand in Mexico. We did a collab with Vans, right? We did. We did this thing where we put Naco stickers on inside potato chip bags, you know, Sabritas bags. I think it was 110 million bags of chips. So we were on everybody's hands, literally, right? And then the chips, they all had a little sticker, different stickers. I don't know, there was 20 or 30. And they had a Naco meter in the back that would gauge how you could just check yourself how Naco you were, you know, and they would say things like, do you clap when the airplane lands? You know, how often do you do it or something like that, right? So you can grade yourself, you know.
Amazing.
I don't only clap, but I pray and I cross myself. Oh shit, you're a real Naco, right? Or maybe the not so Naco answer would be, oh, my private plane lands so smooth that I don't even notice when we land, right?
That's right.
So stuff like that.
That's fun. That's amazing. 110 million stickers. And like you said, I think like in a theme that comes up a lot in, you know, the articles that have been written about you and when you're talking, you know, for yourself and your brand is that idea of like learning to accept yourself as Mexicans, you know, which has always been a big issue. And I guess that's the thing with Naco is like, you're not just saying like, hey, you know, Mexicans can be cool with our Nikes. But you're taking the thing that Mexicans, like, you know, universally kind of look down on and would not have thought to be proud of, and you're making, like, a fucking cool international brand out of it.
Yeah, and that was also the other side of it, right? Wearing a Star Wars t-shirt also made you say, you know what, I have an accent and I'm proud of it, you know? This is me. I'm caught between, you know, Mexico and the U.S., or I might not be perfect to the eyes of an American, but it's almost time to just honor who we are, right? You know, it's happened. I think it's happening to a lot of us where you encounter a person that he looks Latino or Mexican and you speak to them in Spanish at a restaurant or something, and they come back to you in English, like, right? So I think for us it was also about embracing your Mexicanity or biculturalness, or it's about embracing who we were at that point and time and the hybrid
of
cultures.
It's kind of amazing to think that was 20 years ago and it was a different moment in the border and certainly a different moment in politics. Brand Mexico, as you know, as our president is trying to establish it, is some deeply fucked up shit, you know. It's like I don't know what it just feels impossible to get to a good place when you have a guy who starts his campaign by saying Mexicans are rapists and has continued to just, push the envelope. And it's trickled down even, as I think I've mentioned on this podcast before, like some incidents at like my son's middle school were just people talking shit about Mexicans. And, you know, my kids identify as that. And like, that's like, it's really fucked up. And that's in Manhattan. That's in like liberal. And you just realize that, like, how ugly, I mean, just how extremely ugly the way that people talk about Mexicans is. And, like, I mean, I guess it was always there. And maybe, you know, this Joker has allowed it to flower, you know, like mushrooms and shit. But, like, there's something that's, like, there's a big need for And I don't know. I mean, I've spent a lot of time here. I don't sense that Mexicans are feeling any worse about themselves because of what that asshole is saying. But still, like, how do you combat, I guess?
I guess it fuels you to be who you are, right? And say, no, we're not that. So I'm just going to be better of what I am so that I guess the world notices. I'm not sure if you saw what I posted today, but I posted this, just this one-liner on Instagram that says, God bless America, Latina.
I did see that, yes.
Right, so that's a new project that I'm starting. Actually, the idea comes from the friend of a friend that but my friend Rodrigo Roji, he's an amazing tattoo artist in Mexico City, and he came across this line through a friend of his, and he asked him if he could commercialize it in a way or just put it out. So we're gonna be releasing a little capsule collection, just, you know, very simple. It's just, everything is white. It's just the one sentence, and it says, God bless America Latina. And then the manifesto has to do with, it's not about geography or it's not about a place, which of course, you know, hits on the whole political tone right now, but it's about just who you are and what you have running through your veins. You know, it's about that flavor, right? So we're playing around with that.
Oh, that's
right,
badass.
Also because in the U.S., the concept of America is a country. And for us, the concept of America is a continent, right?
Yeah.
And last I checked in the map, it was still a continent.
I you know, to raise my hand, I do this shit all the time. And I'm like constantly re-recording. Even when we were doing like episodes in Canada, you know, I'm just like, American Thanksgiving. I'm like, well, actually.
Right, exactly.
Canada is also America.
Right.
So as ungainly as it is to say U.S. or United States, that's kind of that's what we're actually talking about.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the NACO chapter closed a few years back, but I guess, you know, it's in the DNA, you know, in my DNA that I keep running through this through two ideas like it, or I just gravitate towards them. I think they're very, very powerful, you know? So taking that, you know, taking this God bless America and just adding that little, you know, cherry on top there to switch it all up, I think it's kind of fun.
And I love that, like, it's something almost with that little punchline, like, you know, that for a while you would see a lot of these red MAGA hats in New York City, but then when you got closer, we'd say, make America gay again, you know, and then you're just like, okay, taking somebody who's might, you know, maybe somebody's
make America Mexico again.
Yeah. So I appreciate that effort. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's like, I mean, you had said that at I think you gave a talk in New York where you were kind of outlining like what the creative process is for you and what's important. And it starts off with like simplicity and humor. Wow. Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's a good way to communicate, you know, to be strong.
Yeah. And so you don't have to, don't let them see you mad. Right. Like your response to these things. Obviously, like my instant reaction is just be so angry about this stuff. But you having lived, you know, in this war for much longer and with, you know, much more personal stakes, obviously you're like, okay, we fight them with humor, you know?
Right.
We take their words and put them back on them. You know, expose the ridiculousness.
Yeah. What wasn't I'm not sure if I'm going to be too much off topic, but wasn't...
There's no such thing.
Obamacare, that the term was a derogative term, right? They were teasing him with that, right?
Right. They wanted to saddle him.
Exactly. Obamacare was supposed to be this negative thing, right? And then he turned it on them and it became something positive that he was very proud and he spoke proudly about.
Right.
So I love.
And I guess that's when the word Mexican alone is supposed to be a slur,
right?
You know, in the United States, but Mexico knows what it has. And I think Mexican Americans know what they are and what they've done. So then they can just... take that with pride and just be like,
and I guess the opposite of that could be what happened to the word chilango. It used to be a pride thing, right? And now I think some people use it to define. So I would say, I mean, still people use it in a positive way, like being a chilango, which means being from Mexico City, but also there's a way and you could use it to call a NACO from Mexico City.
Oh, interesting.
Like you're being such a chilango, like you're being such a fresa, or you're being such a, a boy from the capital, I guess. Or
well, you know, didn't you make like at some point Chilangolandia shirts?
Right, exactly. Because that was our other kind of mission, you know, which I really like to make physical those things that exist in our humor and our conscious culture or whatever, but that had never been materialized, you know. So we would call, you know, you would hear a lot of people saying, "Where were you? Oh, in Chilangolandia." Right, so it was, but it ended there. So we decided to take upon ourselves to make the official souvenir of Chilangolandia, right? So that people could actually go to Mexico City and buy it, you know, and say, "Where were you?" Well,
it was Chilangolandia.
Yeah, isn't this obvious? I'm wearing this shirt, right? Like if you were going to Disneyland or New York, and we made the I Love DFA similar to the I Love New York for the same reasons, right? We made a Tijuana shirt just to make a Tijuana shirt that was cool. So yeah, man, we played around with a lot of things.
So the Naco chapter is closed, but you know, but again, a lot of the work that you do and seems, mm-hmm. you know, seems to be in that same playing in that same space. What are some projects? I know you've got the coffee shop in LA. Mm-hmm. Like, what I read something about Los Nerds van al Museo or something about the LACMA thing.
I don't think that was me, but.
Did you have a museum? You were like hooked somebody up with some museum project.
Yeah, maybe it was a band Kinky where I hooked them up at LACMA to go play or something.
Yeah. It was just, I love the headline. It was like in the Monterey paper. Like,
oh, okay. So
the Nerds van al Museo.
Oh, yeah. I think it might have been because they did, they asked me to help them curate a musicians from Mexico because they had this program where they asked a band to redo the music of a film live.
Okay.
You know? And they did Weird Science.
Oh shit. Weird Science. That's great. Yeah, some great musical options in there.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe that's where that one's coming from. Sorry it escaped me for a little bit.
You're
so,
too busy. There's just too many fucking projects around.
I am. So while Naco's going along, you know, and this is what happens also with corporate or big business. Once you make a mark and you start talking to your demographic, right? And to your peers, I guess, because you're at that point, you are the same age, right? And then all the brands have been struggling and spending millions of dollars on trying to communicate with them. And you've opened it, right? You establish this communication, they relate to you and they wear your product. So now they all come rushing and knocking on your door, you know, like, can you, since you're having this dialogue, can you throw my brand in there, right? So they're all trying to collaborate with you or hire you to sell them creative or things like that, right? They want to piggyback off of you. So when Naco started, I also, there was that part, that component, and there was also, which was fine because, I mean, it's just part of the whole thing. And then there was, of course, a lot of the other creatives doing things at the same time, where we would, you know, do joint projects together, or they would ask us to design their records or help with their merch or their identity for their restaurants or things like that, or their films.
Yeah. Well, you know? I mean, having a magic touch with branding is like, you know, mm-hmm. it's like being a fucking wizard in our, you know.
Yeah, man. It's not an easy one to do. So when Naco started, parallel to that, I always had my design studio, right? I would offer freelance design and branding services, and that turned into its whole thing. So through that, when Naco was starting, I was lucky enough to hook up with Gustavo Santaolalla, the musician who won 2 Academy Awards for doing music for, I think he did, I mean, he's done a lot, but the Academy Awards were for Brokeback Mountain and Babel from Alejandro González Iñárritu. Mm-hmm. And he, at that time, he was producing Molotov and Juanes and Café Tacuba and Julieta Venegas and Maldita Vecindad and all those bands. So he was kind of, him and his partner, Anibal Kerpel, were mentors to me at that point. They opened a door for me. They asked me to help them design records and things for their label. So I don't think, I probably designed maybe 20 records, you know, did all the creative for little bands in Uruguay, in Chile, in Argentina, in Mexico, and then big bands also. So I mean, I think at this point, maybe I've designed close to 80 records or something like that. Damn. So it's fun, man.
Yeah.
I mean, music is another one of my passions. I mean, one of the main Naco logos and spinoffs was the AC/DC logo, right? That with the NA then the Bolt and the CO. So we were always very musical also with some of our inspiration.
Yeah,
so,
Judas Tadeo, right?
Judas Tadeo for Judas Priest. Right. Yeah. And then, so there's been a lot of branches, you know. Also around that time when we were starting, we hooked up with the directors of Coachella, and we've worked with Coachella for almost 20 years now, you know, and doing a lot of creative. And at the beginning, we were doing a little bit of consulting in regards to what was happening in the music, in the Latin American music landscape.
Yeah.
Stuff. So yeah, man, there's been a lot of stuff.
So that all of that work continues.
Right. Exactly. We're still engaged with Coachella. We're still doing a lot of records. We did Los Tigres del Norte a couple months ago, the beautiful record they did at Folsom Prison.
That was so sick. And just the style, how they rolled up. Fucking.
Oh, they're hard.
Johnny Cash.
Oh, yeah. The whole thing.
Redux. Mm-hmm.
You know, fun things like that. So we've always, you know, been sharpening our pencil, I guess, and doing creative.
How where do you live now? I mean, are you in LA? Are you in Tijuana?
I'm based in LA.
Yeah.
My wife is from Tijuana, and of course, so am I. So and we just had a baby 6 months ago.
Oh, shit. Congratulations.
So thank you. So we've been spending some time in Tijuana lately just because the grandparents are here and we can delegate some responsibilities.
Is this your first baby?
Yes.
All right.
Uh-huh.
So that brings up a bunch of thoughts, right? About like, you know, what world is this child coming into?
Absolutely. And then is he going to be educated in the U.S. or, right?
Have you all made all your decisions?
No, not yet. We're still trying to find 6 hours of sleep in one, you know?
That's probably like the best first starting point for parental decisions is exactly. Realize that you're not in your right fucking mind.
Exactly,
you know?
To be making decisions.
Right.
And I mean, I've been in LA for probably 22, 23 years because I moved out there to go to college. And I've always stayed there when NACO was really big and firing on all cylinders. I had an apartment in Mexico City that I would spend a lot of time in because we had our headquarters out there. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would be... You know, LA is my base, a lot of Mexico City, a lot of Tijuana, some work, but also a lot of family things. And then a little bit of Brooklyn, New York, because I collaborate with Remezcla.
Oh, sure.
Which is...
those guys are great, man.
Yeah, which is, I guess, a multimedia platform.
It's a media brand. It's one of the ones that we always look at. And you're like, you know, these guys are legit.
Yeah, they're pretty tuned in.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And they have a very cool voice, and I think they're probably one of the most popular in regards to the U.S. Hispanic millennial market. They really have a good dialogue with that demographic, which is very desirable for all brands right now.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, boy, I bet Coke is just trying to throw money at those dudes, you know?
Like, so I collaborate with them a lot for like about 10 years. Andrew Herrera, the founder there, is one of my good friends. So I also make the hike out to Bushwick, where they are right now.
To Bushwicklandia. So you're in all these different places. You have yet to decide whether your child is going to, you know, physically be from here and kind of grow up in Tijuana versus LA versus somewhere. I mean, does it even matter, I guess, in a sense?
Yeah, no, I think, look, I like being in Los Angeles and being a creative. I think it's a good place to be. You know, I mean, I would say there's creative work in a lot of places, but it's more well respected and recognized, and it's well paid in the U.S. In Mexico, it's hard, man. It's hard for creatives, and I don't think they put the value to it that it sometimes deserves, right? So I think California is a good place for me in regards to work. And I'm not sure if I'm really that torn in regards to being born educating my kid in Mexico or the U.S. because he would always have a Mexican household.
Yeah.
Right. So that's going to be his first education, I guess. I am more concerned about him being in a more creative environment when it comes to education and things like that.
Mexican schools have a reputation of being like, now write this down and repeat after me.
I didn't have fun going to school here, you know, me being a creative kid, you know, and having all this need to find some creative outlets. Tijuana was tough for me in that sense, you know, like, why the fuck am I taking this chemistry class, man? I'm really not into it, and I don't want to do it. I'm not going to use it. It's not what I want to do. Like, it was challenging to me. And then just to put it in contrast, when I went to Art Center, I aced the whole thing. I graduated probably highest of my class. I don't remember. And I didn't even remember making an effort.
That must have been such a mind fuck to go to a place where, like, they celebrate all the stuff that made you a bad student or unhappy student.
Or a bum out here, right? But I'll tell you what. I mean, just to paint a little Tijuana picture on what happens when this is coming from the privileged side, right? Because I mean, my parents are middle class. They made an effort for me to go to a private school. My dad's an accountant. He works very hard, of course, to put me and my two brothers to school. My mom was a stay at home mom. You know, she did her thing, and she had her hands full with us. But for example, when I was 18, I had graduated high school. I had my mind said that I wanted to go to the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena, a very prestigious art school, probably one of the best in the country. It's a private school, it's expensive, and it's not about money. You have to have a good portfolio to get in, right? So they review your work. So I was going to, I started going to a Southwestern college here in Chula Vista, just across the border, to get some GE done and some art classes so I can build a portfolio, right? So I have something to show for myself. And while we were there, we were starting to look at, okay, do you think I could apply in a year or in 2 years? Like, where am I? So we would visit different campuses in San Francisco just to see what was out there. But I was fixed on Art Center. And so we applied, my friend Ricardo and I applied for a minority scholarship, right? For some night courses. And we both got them. It was amazing, but then it was a blessing in disguise. But the blessing was that there was a tiger inside of the gift, right? There was this beast, because then this would be my days. I would wake up in Tijuana around 5 a.m., cross the border to go to Southwestern College. You know, the border wait could be anywhere from 30 minutes to 2 hours, right?
You would driving, right?
Driving in a car. Uh-huh. So either I would pick up Ricardo or he would pick up me, you know, or carpool or something like that. So we would drive. We would go to Southwestern. I think I would do a couple of classes, like from 8 to 11 or something like that. I would go to Burger King there in Chula Vista, work a couple of hours, drive to Pasadena, you know, do the night course from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. because those are the night classes, and then drive back to Tijuana.
Jesus, dude.
Like once or twice a week.
Wow.
Yeah, for maybe 6 months or something like that. So, I was a privileged kid, and that was the grind, you know?
Right. So for a middle-class Mexican, that's also a life that you have to go through to be able to get the things you want.
Right, exactly. I mean, I set myself, without knowing it, you know, a big goal, right? I mean, I want to go to Art Center, and it's a big school, and it's hard to get in and stuff, you know? But I mean, I guess, right, you aim high, right? And then see where you land. But yeah, man, it was a hustle. More than anything, I'm surprised I didn't get into an accident driving back, you know, like
falling just asleep, like, at the wheel. Super tired.
Yes, and, yeah. Yes, I remember, you know.
It is, yeah. I mean, the extreme hustle of Mexicans feels to me like an elemental force that transcends class and, like, you know.
I think, for example, that's why there's a lot of great Mexican boxers, for example. They're fighters, right? We're fighters, I guess. So yeah, man, I mean, that's the... the fresa hustle, I guess, you know, because of course there's people that are undocumented, and that's a whole journey that it's way, way deeper than mine, you know?
Right. And there's a lot of different levels of risk that might go into it.
Of course.
But still, that's mm-hmm. That's the thing. And you know, as a parent also, like, how do you communicate those values mm-hmm. to your kid, like, without having them maybe have to be forged in mm-hmm. you know, in iron or in the fire, but yeah, that does feel like there's got to be some genetic component that's just like, you know, this is like, it's built into the DNA, like, right. This is not the first rodeo for mm-hmm. Mexicans who have to, like, take three jobs or, like, figure out how to make their way in a hostile world, you know. Mm-hmm.
And then, for example, just to contrast that, I think that's really good to have, right? That drive and that mentality and that hustle. But, you know, being now in America, in the U.S., right, for 20-something years, I think there's another side to it that at least I missed when I was growing up. For example, I think there's a lot of value to and I'm, for lack of better words, of I'm just gonna say of going to play golf on Saturday, and networking and meeting people and things like that. Right? I think there's as much of value of that, because without the right contacts, that's the whole other part, you know. So the hustle I was doing was getting me a skill, right? And it was putting me in a place where people I needed to meet also, because now all those dudes and girls are art directors at big studios or at record companies and things like that. But you also have to play that card as well, right? You have to go out for drinks or you know, and go play golf on Sundays. Not that I play golf, but I guess that's the
metaphor.
The metaphor for it, right?
What artists, what's their version of playing golf?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you have to do an ayahuasca trip with them.
There it is.
So yeah, I think there's that other part of the hustle that you have to play.
Right.
Right.
Well, especially, you know, you traffic in ideas in a way that's like, it's not about time and seat.
Right. Right. I was just giving this lecture in Oaxaca, and this kid was asking me, so how do I get to a record label? You know, how do I get to a band? You know, and then that's the other side of the hustle. You know, how do you, you know? Well, you start knocking on doors, you start going to shows, you start to try to hang out backstage and see who you meet, or you go to the local bar and ask, you know, the local band, hey, can I design a t-shirt for you? And you figure your way in, you know? But then there's that other hustle, right?
Did he seem satisfied with the answer?
Yeah. I think he was missing that step. And I said, no, man, you got to start with the lowest hanging fruit. Like, you got to know a musician, you know, you got to know one guy, and then you do that and you put it on your social now or your portfolio, and you build yourself something with local until, you know, something opens up, you know.
What is the creative community here in Tijuana, and like, what does it need for the people who can't be across the border and kind of, you know, have that commute, I guess? What does it need to kind of make sure that the next kid coming up who maybe doesn't have a visa is able to have a great life doing great work?
Right. That's a very, very loaded question in a sense. Let me start by saying that I think Tijuana is in a great point right now creatively and from an entrepreneurial point, right? I think there was a wave of violence, maybe I would say, I don't know, I'm trying to think, maybe 10, 8 years ago, where the whole Revolución Street shut down. There wasn't any tourism coming in. And then the local entrepreneurs took it to themselves. Like, I'm going to open my little microbrewery. I'm going to take it because now all the brick and mortar shops were really cheap, right? Because no one was renting them, especially around here in downtown. So I think a lot of the local guys took their little microbrewery out of their garage and they say, well, I'm going to give it a shot, right? And they started opening their own food trucks and little restaurants. And then the whole Valle de Guadalupe is developing. So I think from a design, branding, creative point, there's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's all these things happening, which is very, very exciting.
I did. Yeah. Like Telefonica, right. Gastropark.
Beautiful.
Is like,
I would think there's, I don't know, 50 microbreweries in Tijuana right now.
That's nuts. Shout out. You had wanted to bring a beer, but we had to schedule this for 10 in the morning. Yes. After you've been on a mezcal trip to Oaxaca.
Exactly.
So, but what was the beer you had wanted to bring?
Well, there's a few I like. I like Border Cycle. My brother is involved with them. I like it. They have a whole punk rock attitude to it. So that one's kind of fun.
All right.
But there's a lot of them, you know. And then now the question is, right, there's all this work, right? There's all these brands that need to get branded, right? From boutique hotels to wineries to labels for wines to all these microbreweries to restaurants to but there's a lot, right? So now my other question is, how do we get these local entrepreneurs that are spending their own hard-earned pesos to appreciate a branding work, right? Mm-hmm. And not wanting to throw, I'll give you $300 to do this, right? Because it's an integral. I mean, they might spend, I don't know, $50,000 on the little restaurant, but they want to spend $500 on the bow that you're going to put on your business card, quote unquote, right? For this project that you're building, you know? So how do we get them to understand that this is as valuable as your product, as your building, as, you know, your customer service, having good branding? I mean,
you got to have social media presence and all right. that, you know, you got to do it the right way.
So the ecosystem is here, but the education around like
right, the appreciation, presenting yourself. Exactly. Yeah. Right. And I think there is because, for example, I think some people are understanding. I'm getting some work in Tijuana where people are saying, I want someone maybe with a little bit more expertise or that it's been around a little more, you know, but then I that's always part of my speech, you know, like speech. I live in Los Angeles, so I can't give you Tijuana prices. You know, there might be a little friends and family deal thrown in there because I want to do it. It brings me out here close to my family. I get to bring the grandkid down, you know,
right.
And all that. And I want to do it and I love it. And I want to do cool things and I'm passionate about this stuff that's going out here, but I definitely can't give it away.
Right. It's going to be at a premium. So when people come to you and still decide that they want to get some of that Chavarin goodness, then that's a sign that they're taking this shit seriously.
Right, exactly. And there is some of that, right? Yeah. I'm working with this food and wine festival in the Valle de Guadalupe that I'm involved because I'm doing all the creative for it.
That's right.
So it's very cool. I'm involved with this winery called La Lomita out in Valle de Guadalupe that makes great wine. I've designed some of their labels and done some creative work. I have a good friendship with them. So yeah, man, there's always things happening. And yep. I can see more and more as there's a lot of competition. The design work is going to have to be elevated for you to separate yourself from the
wine is such a crazy billboard, you know, right. just on every bottle. Right. It's like your Nacho tests in 110 million. Like there's like very wide distributed and the look and the logo is the product really, you know, until people like crack it open.
Right. And I think, you know, all the designers in Tijuana, they probably all have a WhatsApp group, right? Because
that's what people do. Yes.
That's what people do. They should just say no more selling logos for $300 or a branding project, right? Our base now is 2,000, you know, and start from there, you know, because people do give away. I guess you will always find someone to do it for 50 bucks cheaper or something like that, you know? So there needs to be some
solidarity.
Well, listen. Some grouping, some texting together or gatherings, right? And that's how you form, you know, the Tijuana Design Group or I don't know, something they need to put together and they start, you know?
You were
having this conversation.
You were sitting across, you know, from a member of a tribe that had sold itself out so hardcore, you know, in U.S. media, just like giving it away for free, seeing competition as, you know, the ultimate aim and not realizing that we were all selling our services down to the lowest dollar as journalists and as publications. Mm-hmm. And it's, it could not be overstated. We've seen what happened to journalism because everybody was just like, hey, let's give it away for free. And, you know, and now writers make fucking 5 cents a word. Mm-hmm. And that's what advertisers think it's worth. So, yes, get on that WhatsApp group. You Tijuana designers.
Exactly.
Defend yourself and your rates.
I just saw this post on social media, on the MySpace, where this guy was making let's hope I don't murder it. He was making a recipe, you know, just doing that shot from the top where they see what you're cooking, but the plate was empty and he was adding empty stuff. And he said, I'm making this beautiful meal for me and my family from all the exposure I'm getting from all the projects that I'm doing for free.
I definitely retweeted that on my Twitter. Right? Yeah, no doubt. That's what the world wants to feed us.
Exactly. But you're going to get all this exposure, man. People are going to see it. I have, you know, a million followers, man. You should work for me for free.
Yeah. And I can imagine, like, if that argument went over well in the States or was successful, you know, in its sort of terrible way, how this kid in Oaxaca who's desperate to start, you know, working with bands and, you know, how it would be even more susceptible, you know, they're not coming from a position of strength if you're not a well-off kid in Mexico, you know? So yeah, that's, gotta get together, get that community going. Aligned. And then everybody just understands like, hey, this is the price. This is what this shit costs.
Right.
So
I mean, I don't know, lawyers do it. They all seem to charge up from $300 an hour and up, right?
Their WhatsApp group started a long time ago.
A long time ago. They got aligned pretty quick.
That's exactly right. All right, cool. Well, what are we gonna see next coming from you? We got God Bless America Latina.
Right.
What else is like, what's the next one of the things
in the we are already working on Coachella and Stagecoach 2020. I mean, that's a studio that's a project that we've done for a while, and we're very happy to be part of that team. You know, it's a monster now of a project, and there's really cool people involved, and we're very happy to be part of that team. The Food and Wine Festival is coming back again for October of next year.
October of next year, bigger and badder than ever.
Yes, yeah. Uh-huh. So we're doing that, and what else? Oh yeah, a good one. I'm doing a clothing line just based on Tijuana, just celebrating Tijuana.
Okay.
So that's probably going to launch.
You're burying the lead. What's the Tijuana clothing line like?
It's...
What can you say at this point?
Yeah, it's going to be celebrating Tijuana icons. Uh-huh.
Oh, shit.
I think we'll leave it at that.
Okay. We talking about like politicians or like Lawana or...
No, more in line with... What we're talking about with the entrepreneurs and the companies that started here 100 years ago.
Okay.
And I don't know, maybe we'll throw in a line of apparel for your favorite taqueria out there or something like that, you know?
All right.
So like very, very rooted in celebrating, you know, because Tijuana, being that it's really close to the U.S., has a very rich iconography, graphic history, you know, in the streets and from local entrepreneurs and businesses and things like that. Some things that still exist right now, some things that are long gone that we want to honor and things like that. So we want to do it all through an apparel line.
Retro celebratory.
Yeah.
Backward looking, forward facing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tijuana clothing line.
All of that in one t-shirt.
All right, we'll get back to work then.
Yeah, exactly.
You got a baby and a business, mm-hmm. And a lot of stuff going on. So
yeah, man.
I appreciate you coming in, Eduardo.
Thank you.
And,
appreciate it, man.
Making the time to make it happen.
If there's still someone listening out there that went through our whole conversation, thank you for staying. I appreciate it.
They love it. This is what they come for every week.
Awesome.
Thanks, man.
Thank you.
The Trip from Roads and Kingdoms is hosted by me, Nathan Thornburg. Alexa Van Sickle is our producer. Music by Dan the Automator. Episode illustration by Daisy D. Show artwork by Adele Rodriguez. Executive producers are me and Matt Goulding, also of Roads and Kingdoms. Next week, we will be with one of the culinary stars of this part of the world, from either side of the border, Rufo Ibarra. We talked about the gilded little speakeasy he's got tucked away in the back of his restaurant, and then we roll to Valle de Guadalupe to drink cold tecates and meet the people who grow the ridiculously good things that have powered and will power his Baja cuisine. We will meet you there.